There's a worker shortage coming up in the STEM field, science, technology, engineering, and math. Or at least, that's what some people are saying in the corporate world, and President Obama has called for major investment in training people for an upcoming STEM crisis.
Our next guest looked at the numbers, and he doesn't buy the idea of a shortage. Robert Charette joins us now. He's a contributing editor for IEEE Spectrum magazine, and his piece on the STEM fields is linked on our Facebook page. Bob, welcome to the show.
Well, good afternoon, Veronica and Rob.
Well, it seems like it's reached the status of conventional wisdom that we don't have enough workers for the science, technology, engineering, math professions. How widespread has that idea become?
Well, it's become widespread not only in the U.S., but across the world. In the U.S., there was a number of reports that were commissioned by the presidents of the National Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Engineering, and the Institute of Medicine that basically argued that there wasn't enough students entering the workforce in the STEM field, nor did we have enough STEM workers to meet the national requirements, and that if this continued, that we would have an attack on our high quality of life in the United States, that we would lose our privileged condition, and that it was so important that it was a national priority for the United States, and that we had to immediately embark on a policy of investment to increase the number of teachers with deep STEM backgrounds, along with 10,000 new engineers per year and 1 million STEM students over the next decade.
Well, you looked at the numbers pretty hard. You crunched them. You sifted through a lot of papers and data. What did you find?
Well, what I found, and it confirmed what other studies have found, was that there really hasn't been a STEM shortage. There hasn't been a STEM shortage in decades. People at Rand, people at Sloan, people even in Wisconsin, at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, and at the University of Wisconsin and Madison have dug through this in great detail, and it's a myth. There is no STEM shortage. There hasn't been a STEM shortage. There are other forces that would like to see a STEM shortage, but there's nothing there. We have more STEM graduates than we have STEM jobs. There may be particular fields where there are shortages, but most of those are actually caused either by a new technology that comes out and there's a short-term shortage, or it's actually caused by industry deciding to fire people and then all of a sudden finding that they have to hire them back.
Well, if you're right about the numbers, why do we keep hearing about this crisis of science people?
Well, it goes back to, you know, when I was a child, when I was very young in the late 1950s, it goes back to Sputnik, and it actually goes back to the end of World War II, when we felt that the Soviet Union was producing so many more scientists and engineers in the United States and that we were falling behind. The Sputnik crisis was a prime example of that, where the Soviet Union launched a satellite and everyone in the United States, the politicians, the military, and others felt that was a symbol that we were falling behind. But in actual fact, there was a study that was done in 1957 that showed that there was no STEM. No, at that time, we didn't call it STEM. We called it science and engineering. There was no science and engineering shortfall at all. However, you know, it makes for good politics. It makes for, you know, a great soundbite at a political level, because, you know, no one in the United States wants to say, well, you know, we're okay, because that makes it sound like we're complacent, when in fact, you know, we want to have this issue of always falling behind. We thought we were falling behind the Soviets. We thought we were falling behind the Japanese. We're now thinking we're falling behind the Chinese and the Indians. There's really nothing to this at all. We're doing very, very well. We've had certain elements in terms of economic downturns, but overall, from a science and technology standpoint, we are way above everybody else. Now, if we're worried about it, that's fine, but, you know, let's not call it a crisis.
Now, you mentioned before that there are forces that would like there to be a shortage in the STEM fields. Who would want that?
Well, businesses obviously would like it. You know, if you have what business, you know, you can't blame them, really. What they would like is a plentiful supply of highly skilled workers that they don't have to pay a lot of money for.
And they get that by fear-mongering?
Well,
it's
sure,
kind of because, a dire thing to do.
Well, it's not unknown. let's face it, you know, they want to, if there's a shortage, then it allows them to make arguments about bringing in guest workers to fill in these jobs and these skills that supposedly other countries have that we don't. And not in small numbers, but in tens of thousands of workers every year who supposedly have much higher skills, yet those same students, the same workers have come to the U.S. to get their education. We see government wanting to do that. In fact, if you take a, you know, if you just look at some of the economics, you know, Alan Greenspan, the former Fed chair, you know, said that our STEM students, our skilled workers are paid too much, and that what we need to do is open up immigration so we can forcefully lower those wages. In fact, there was another Nobel Prize winner who wrote in the recently, a few years ago, that, you know, the annual admission of a million or more skilled workers, such as engineers and scientists, would lower the earnings of American workers they compete against. The opposition from competing American workers is probably the main reason for the sharp restrictions on the number of immigrant workers admitted today. That opposition is understandable, but that doesn't make it good for the country as a whole. So you have economists arguing that we should bring in millions of highly skilled workers, and if it happens to knock out all our students and our STEM workers because they're paid too much, well, too bad. It's good for the country.
Do you think maybe what we're really seeing is just sort of an unlocalized fear that we're not going to be able to keep up with the pace of science and invention right now? I mean, everyone sees how fast technology is moving, and it seems to move faster than almost anybody can keep up with. Maybe we're just sort of directing it at this one area instead of, you know, looking at it and addressing sort of more fears about technology and science running away with us.
Well, I think that's part of it. You know, at the same time, as some of the economists are, you know, arguing about bringing in more high-tech workers in the U.S., they're also worried about automation eliminating jobs here. You know, I think that a lot of there isn't a good understanding of what, you know, we want to do as a nation in terms of innovation and technology. You know, I think you're correct in that, you know, we worry about it. We worry that we're falling behind. But, you know, the facts just don't support that worry. Now, you know, certain economists also argue that, you know, the future of the country, the economic well-being, is based on having as many scientists and engineers as possible, because they claim that there's a link between economic value in the country and the number of STEM workers. Well, okay, that's a valid point. But, you know, if we produce more students, more STEM students in their jobs, then we're going to create the actual shortage that we're trying to avoid, or we claim it exists.
Well, one thing you do say is there may not be a crisis in STEM fields, but there is a problem with the way that we're teaching science in general, and that kids seem like they're going through the system and they're not really getting a sound foundation in the sciences.
I think that's true. I think, again, you know, there's a difference between, you know, a STEM labor crisis and more of what is the knowledge that we need to have in our children as they go through school. It is a more complex environment that we're living in today, and it's going to get more complex as you know, the world progresses, time progresses. I think that what we need to do is look harder at what do we need to do to improve the general well-being in terms of science, technology, as well as the arts and liberal arts for all our students. You know, children today are going to be living to 100, if not older, and they're going to have at least 3 to 5 separate careers. We need to teach them how to, you know, we need to show them how to learn. You know, we need to teach them how to learn so that they can have good jobs over their lifetime, which is going to be a lot longer than mine. I'm approaching 60, but my children, who you know, are in their teens, are probably going to live to 100, 110 as an average age.
So then, when you say we should focus our energies on teaching teachers about how to teach science,
well, it's how to teach kids how to learn, because they're going to have to learn throughout their life. So we need to teach teachers, we need to change our curricula. We're a lot of what we're doing in this country, and in my opinion, is teaching to test. We're not teaching what the kids need to know to actually function in a very complex, technologically driven society.
Well, Robert, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you very much.
We've been talking to Robert Charette, contributing editor for IEEE Spectrum Magazine.